This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. You can start your own blog or website in minutes for a very low price, just $6.95 per month, and you get one-click installation of your blog, your own .com domain name, and no worries about bandwidth. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back to a brand new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, a fresh one. Not like the pre-cooked, reheated podcast that you've been listening to for the last 3 weeks. I was in Greece on vacation. We decided to pre-record a few things, knowing very well that during these 3 weeks, there would be Comic-Con and that there would be a ton of news. But Dave Kale is joining me this morning. Dave, I didn't expect this much news. What about you?
Yeah, there was I've been watching in real time, so I guess I expected it, but I knew there'd be a lot of stuff that would come out of Comic-Con, but there's just been an avalanche even afterward.
It doesn't stop anymore. It's
no,
crazy.
Yeah, we thought things would slow down this summer, and that there wouldn't be that much more, but actually it's, at least in the last couple of weeks, it's accelerated.
Exactly. So what are we going to do in this particular episode? Because as usual, we only have about 55 minutes for each show. We don't want to try to do too much. What we're going to do is we're going to touch upon Comic-Con, and Dave, you've got some really good detailed accounts on what was shown there, and I've missed most of that coverage. I had very limited internet access, plus there was, you know, the Greek Sea to swim in and lots of ancient ruins to visit, so I was kind of busy. So we're going to talk about that briefly. We also want to touch upon this great video that was the number 8 of the production videos that was posted right around Comic-Con or just after it. But we are working currently on a frame-by-frame analysis of that. It has been done by a German website, and we're doing our own version of that. We're going to post that on the website and perhaps record a separate episode about that analysis, because there is a ton of stuff in that production video that I haven't read about on any other website. And I think it reveals way more about not just the first movie, but also the second and the third movie that we definitely need to address. So we're going to touch upon it, but we want to focus our main discussion, of course, on the big bombshell news, and that is no longer are we looking forward to 2 Hobbit movies, but 3 Hobbit movies. And in addition to that, the news broke yesterday. It's not really official news, but there is a rumor, but apparently very reliable rumor coming from theOneRing.net, and that is that 2 new titles for Hobbit movies have been registered by New Line. And so we're going to talk about those titles, what they mean, what the impact is on the story, what it tells us about the contents of these 3 Hobbit movies. And so without further ado, let's just start with Comic-Con.
Get down. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Dave, I don't know about you, but I so wish I could have been eavesdropping there on that big convention, that meeting with Peter Jackson and then the main actors of The Hobbit. There was a panel discussion. They showed footage, and they showed it just to the people in the room. And we only saw part of it later on in the production video. But you know much more about what happened there at Comic-Con. So give me a rundown of what I missed.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. I am determined to go next year, and I guess the year after now.
Me too.
Yeah, I immediately after this year's Comic-Con, I went and registered to get on the mailing list to be alerted to when tickets would be available, and So, and I also have a friend in San Diego who sounds well connected and tells me he can get me tickets. So I'm going next year.
Awesome.
One way or the other. I missed way too much this year. Not going to do it again.
Yeah, especially the whole excitement about the, you know, seeing Peter Jackson, meeting the actors, just getting these first glimpses. It's amazing. So the first photo that I saw coming from Comic-Con that was Hobbit-related was this huge prop of the three stone trolls, which blew me away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Huge, huge life-size stone trolls. And it also surprised me a little bit because I had always assumed that these stone trolls were not props, but digital creatures. So,
right. Yeah, these were they were occupying the Weta workshop space.
Ah.
And when I say occupying, I really mean
dominating.
Yes. Yeah, the people were saying that they like just filled up the Weta workshop booth area, and they were huge. And they weren't like, you know, little figurines or anything. No, they were kind of what you would expect, sort of, you know, full-sized statues, like, you know, looming over people and stuff. So,
now, do you think that those were made specifically for Comic-Con, or might we see these statues actually in the movie itself? Because I assume that whenever we see the trolls moving, and actually we've already seen a glimpse of the trolls in that production video 8 that we're going to talk about. That's all CGI, and for CGI, you don't need to create life-size trolls.
I don't know. That's a good question. I suspect they were probably just made for Comic-Con. I expect that these are just something that Weta Workshop made for promotional purposes. I imagine most of them in the film will probably be digitally done. I mean, maybe these dudes will be I'm looking at the statues again. I was going to suggest that maybe they would use these for the stone, you know, stonified, petrified version of the trolls.
But they don't look like stone.
No, and also these don't look like likely poses for trolls to be frozen in. So
I really love the look of the stone trolls.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like their beards?
I don't know about the beards, but they just look like a good mix of threatening and funny at the same time, and a bit stupid.
Yeah,
and very different from any of the other trolls that we've seen so far.
Right. That I think was one of the big questions. The trolls that were in the Lord of the Rings really didn't seem to. It was hard to imagine how they were going to make trolls that would be compatible. If they just made them like the trolls that were in Lord of the Rings films, how would those be compatible with kind of the William, Tom, and Bert of the books? You know,
exactly, because in Lord of the Rings, they look so menacing and so almost like alien. Whereas these trolls look much more, I don't know, like perhaps there is – with trolls, it's the same as with elves. You've got like stone trolls and wood trolls and whatnot.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. And these dudes, they kept a lot of the same sort of a lot of the same kind of, you know, facial features and structures and general shape and color and stuff. Like they have the wide set eyes that are kind of, you know, even vertically with the nose and the same kind of mouth, but they've just made them look a little more personal. They've given them these really strange wiry beards and hair and some scraps of clothing. So just enough to make them look less like kind of living battering rams and more like actual people.
Right. But that was pretty amazing. I didn't expect them to bring such a prop. And of course, huge eye catcher, because Comic-Con is so huge. You need to have something to stand out. And this, I think, was like a brilliant idea to get all the attention. And of course, everybody wants to be on in a photo with these things. And so the free publicity that you get from bringing these big trolls to the convention floor is huge. Absolutely great idea. Now, then there was this panel discussion, and it featured a private, semi-private screening of footage. Now, how much was shown, and what exactly was in the footage? Do you know that?
So yeah, I have some notes that were prepared for me by a good friend. So yes, I have some ideas. Thanks goes to Trish Lambert, who's a student at Mythgard and is helping out with the Reels in the Dark podcast. She prepared these, so I'm borrowing those, Trish.
And she was there, or?
No, but she was like. I was really busy during Comic-Con, so uh-huh. I was just kind of paying attention, but not really, you know, following everything closely. She was like on top of every single detail as it came out, and reading through every article she could find. So
cool.
She didn't go, but she might as well have been
yeah.
as closely as she was following it.
Sweet.
They showed about 12 minutes from the films, so it was like an unbelievable amount of footage.
Yeah, and I read, by the way, that Peter Jackson on purpose didn't show it in 48 frames per second or in 3D because the projection screen was pretty lousy for that sort of
yeah.
Projection, and also because of the, you know, the previous backlash, he's like, I can never bring that in optimal circumstances, so we just decided
yeah,
to go the old-fashioned way.
I saw an interview with him where he basically said that he knew that if he did that, that's what people would be talking about,
right,
and he didn't
right.
want them to be talking about that. He wanted them to be talking about the film and the story.
Very smart.
So,
very smart.
Yes, very strategic. I guess he's just going to let us deal with it when we get to the theaters
yes.
this fall.
And it will be too late because we'll already have our tickets.
Yep. So it sounds like the clips were fairly pretty rich, a lot of stuff. The major scenes, they give us some footage from the, I guess, the unexpected party. So mm-hmm. the dwarves interacting with Gandalf and Bilbo and talking about what they want to do. There's also a scene that involves Radagast the Brown. There's also definitely some scenes from the Riddle game and scenes of the White Council and a lot of action shots at the end. So a ton of stuff. The highlights, I would say, is the things that really jumped out at me is that the footage that they showed from the unexpected party gives us a glimpse into how Peter Jackson and company are portraying Bilbo
mm-hmm.
and this the Took Baggins dichotomy,
mm-hmm.
And it sounds like contrary to sort of some of the speculation that I've done with Corey where we were sort of wondering if they might. You know, because so Bilbo at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings is the strange, kooky old guy that everybody, you know, kind of they like him because he's generous with his money and throws parties. But they're all suspicious of him and look at him sidelong because he's been on these adventures and he's a weirdo.
Yeah.
We've talked about the possibility that we wonder whether what are they going to do with Bilbo in this film? Are they going to start him out as a Baggins, or are they maybe going to tweak it a bit and make him a little bit more sort of odd,
mm-hmm.
More similar to the post-Hobbit Bilbo.
Yeah.
And we'd wondered if maybe they might tweak it, but this really looks like they're playing up the Baggins side. So there's a point at which they're talking about the fact that there's a key. They have a key to get into Erebor, and there must be a door. And Gandalf says this is why the dwarves need a burglar. And basically the dwarves all say, yeah, this guy's a burglar, sure. And and Bilbo agrees. Bilbo says, yes, I'm not a burglar. He sounds very reluctant and resistant, doesn't
yeah.
want to go, doesn't think he's suited for the job. So looks like they're going for the very – and then he faints at the end. So.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's definitely a big contrast with Frodo and Frodo's role in The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Frodo kind of jumps into the adventure, always very conscious of his mission, whereas in The Hobbit, Bilbo is kind of torn into, and he doesn't want to be there for most of the time, which
yep.
I like that. I love that as a concept, that Bilbo is the reluctant hero.
Right. Yeah, and I guess he – so at the end of this clip, he's – reading the contract, and he starts getting into all the horrible things that could happen to him and how he might die. Mm-hmm. And the dwarves are kind of haranguing him about it, saying like, you know, oh, don't worry, if you like get burned to death by the dragon, once you've turned to ash, it will be totally painless.
So that sounds like great comedy stuff at the start of the movie. Kind of setting mm-hmm. the tone also and separating it from the more dramatic beginning of The Lord of the Rings.
Right. Yeah, it looks like they really tried to,
you've been up early.
Yes, at least in the first film, trying to play up a lot of the humor. So, another example of that would be Radagast the Brown. We got another glimpse of him in the footage, and he's concealing birds under his hat, and being towed along on a sled towed by giant bunnies, as we've seen before.
And of course, we know now what he looks like from the production video, which was awesome.
Yes,
I don't know if we saw him in the production video also in costume, but we definitely. See him in his, in his natural habitat, and I think it's going to be a great, comedic role. But what about the bunny sled? Totally. I mean, do we have a description of what that looks like? Is that, I was reading that, and I was like, wait a minute, like bunnies, like rabbits in front of a sled, and it's not going to look fake? How did they pull that off?
I don't know. I haven't seen very detailed descriptions of what it looked like, just people referring to it as the bunny sled.
But I've not read any comments online of people saying, well, that looked stupid and fake, and so I guess that somehow they make that seem plausible, but I was like, whoa. And where are these bunnies coming from? Is this from Tolkien? It must be from Tolkien.
I think they're taking a little bit of literary license here. I don't recall Tolkien ever describing giant rabbits or anything like that. So what they're doing is just sort of innovating a little bit on the character of Radagast the Brown. We know that he has a special affinity for animals. He's a master of shapes and disguises. He speaks to birds and other animals. So they're just kind of playing with that a little bit. I don't think Tolkien ever describes giant rabbits anywhere. you know, most of the rabbits that he talks about are being stewed. One thing that's really interesting about the footage is that we get to see glimpses of Lake Town as well as Stephen Fry playing the master of Lake Town.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and previously in previous production videos, as we've discussed, there appeared to be kind of a moratorium on footage from the second and now third films, that's kind of interesting. You know, it seems highly unlikely. It seems like if we're going to see Lake Town in the first film, that it's going to be right at the very end with the dwarves' barrels like bumping up against the shore or something. Mm. And it seems very unlikely we'll actually get to see Master of Lake Town. And if IMDb casting lists are to be believed, I don't believe Stephen Fry is cast in the first film. Hmm. And yet, in this footage, we got to see Lake Town and Master of Lake Town. So that seems evidence that they're letting some movie 2 and 3 details.
Or, I've got a theory about that.
Uh-oh.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw much more of Lake Town and Dale and other places in the first movie. And it's and that actually the first movie is much more an establishing movie where we already get to see these places even before they get there. At least I know for sure that we will see Dale in the first movie. So why not Lake Town as well? But anyway, we can talk about that later on, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a little bit of Lake Town, at least in the first.
Including season. The, you think we might get to see Master of Lake Town?
Why not?
Interesting.
Why not?
So we get some glimpses of Gandalf as James Bond sneaking through Dol Guldur, as we have previously. Mm-hmm. And apparently he's running and he's either chasing something or something appears to be chasing him. Not sure what it is. I'm sure it's not Sauron.
No, it's probably the crazy dwarf.
Yeah. And they say that it's, it looks like Thrain jumps out from behind something and attacks him. So, okay.
But that must be it.
Yeah, I don't know how he got out, how he escaped from his dungeon, but I'll be very interested to see how they end up handling that. Okay, so Riddle Game. We get to see a whole bunch of footage from the Riddle Game, and we got to see Bilbo picking up the ring and stuff. And so there's a short exchange between Bilbo and Gollum. And what's really notable here is that people described Gollum as being very, you know, the schizophrenic Gollum from the film, from the Lord of the Ring films, is back. The guy that talks to himself and has multiple personalities, the Sméagol personality and the Gollum personality. And so and he's doing that sort of back and forth thing here. So that answers that question. How is Gollum going to be portrayed? Looks like he's going to be pretty similar to what he was in the other films.
Brilliant. And that kind of matches all the other interviews that were done. And where it's mostly the message is it's going to be exactly the same Sméagol Gollum portrayal. It feels like an old coat or something like that. And so
yep.
That's good, because he's important for the newer audiences to be able to relate to the promotion of these movies.
Right.
If we see Gollum, we're like, oh, of course. Gollum.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before, that they're really playing up the Lord of the Rings, the well-established, well-known Lord of the Rings characters and their roles in these films. I think it's possible, even to the point that their role has been magnified some, you know, like Galadriel's been featured pretty prominently, and I know she's in the film and she'll have some screen time, but I think if you were a person who wasn't familiar with the books, you might get the sense that her role is larger than it probably will end up being.
So. Yes.
Speaking of Galadriel, we're going to skip over this until the end, because this is by far the most controversial part.
Okay.
So we get to see an interesting exchange between Gandalf and Bilbo after they've escaped the caves, when in the book Gandalf and the dwarves ask Bilbo, like, how the heck did you get out of there? Like they're just perplexed that he was able to escape, and then he sneaks into their camp without them realizing he was there. And he does this using his ring.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask him what happened, and he this is the beginning of Bilbo's sort of untruths about this, and he, you know, just says like, oh, well, I'm an excellent burglar, what can I say? And Gandalf kind of, you know, hints that he knows there's more to the story. And so here what we see is that Gandalf says, you've changed, Bilbo Baggins. And Bilbo replies, I found something in the cave. And Gandalf raises his eyebrow and asks, what did you find? And Bilbo hesitates, fingers his vest pocket, and then drops his hand and says, my courage. Gandalf replies, your courage? Good, you'll need it. So
interesting. So that too is kind of referring to what we saw in The Lord of the Rings, where the old Bilbo also does that and kind of, you know, always checks if the ring is still there in his pockets.
Yep. So that brings up some very interesting questions about how they're going to portray Bilbo in the ring. Very, very interested to see what they do there. And I suspect that I have a feeling that we're not going to get a whole lot more about it until the film comes out. I think Peter Jackson's going to play the ring very, very close to the chest, because that's one of those elements from the Lord of the Rings films that really has the potential to overshadow the main storyline of The Hobbit. You know, The Hobbit is the prequel to Lord of the Rings. It is the story of the finding of the ring, you know, that you know, kind of in later years after the War of the Ring, that this essentially becomes one of the most important events in Middle Earth, because it's the finding of the ring.
But it's got to be subtle here. You can't overplay it.
Right. Yeah, but the Hobbit itself is really a much broader story about this guy's journey and stuff. So I think Peter Jackson's going to really kind of try to play that close to the chest and downplay it, so that people don't come in expecting to see a whole bunch of ring stuff.
Right.
So we get to see a whole bunch of action shots. get to see the trolls in action, and apparently from what folks have said, they looked pretty impressive and scary. That they weren't just bumbling oafs once they get moving and start attacking. So we get to see Tauriel a little tiny bit. And Legolas. Like, apparently the last scene of the thing is or one of the last scenes is Legolas hopping out and pointing an arrow in maybe Thorin's face.
Makes sense. That must be Mirkwood first confrontation.
Yep.
Probably.
Hmm. Yep. People couldn't actually hear the quote. Mm-hmm. Because he says something, people couldn't hear it because the audience was screaming. But it's something in the ballpark of "I won't hesitate to kill you, dwarf."
Right, so right.
This is probably from Mirkwood when they are arresting the dwarves for trespassing. So. And one of the last scenes that is a clip we've seen before: Gandalf standing on a hillside, stabbing his staff into the ground with a blast of morning sunlight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to the most controversial thing coming out of the footage, at least, was this scene of Gandalf and Galadriel. Mm-hmm. And the controversy was stirred by comments from Ian McKellen during various interviews and maybe on the panel and stuff.
Really?
Yes. But basically, it has Gandalf and Galadriel in the scene together, which we've seen before. And mm-hmm. there's been hints of this before. She does has this tender moment where she touches his hair and people have been like, "What are they doing?" So in this scene, we see her asking Mithrandir, "Why the halfling?" And Gandalf says, "Saruman believes it is only great power that can hold evil in check. But that is not what I have found. I have found it is the small everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay.
Right.
Small acts of kindness and love. Why Bilbo Baggins? That's because I am afraid and it gives me courage." Gandalf and Galadriel are holding hands, but not in a way that is romantic, more mm-hmm. in the sense of a lifetime of friendship. There's longing, but there's also sadness.
Mm-hmm.
"Do not be afraid, Mithrandir, you're not alone." Then in Elvish with the English subtitles, she says, "If ever you need aid, I will come." And after a long look, she draws away from him, leaving him standing alone. So people were like flipping out because they said, like, "Oh, it's a Galadriel Gandalf romance."
Nah, that's ridiculous. Of course it's not. But this is of course new stuff. This whole dialogue is not from Tolkien or parts of it, perhaps.
Yeah, this is all pretty new stuff.
It does sound like Tolkien. It sounds like something he could have written, though.
Yes. Yeah. I actually think the Gandalf comment is actually very – it's not quite Tolkien-ish. It sounds modern.
But it is definitely in line with the whole
yes.
kind of like the value, the ideals that he wanted to transmit with his story.
Yeah, it's
that
totally, it is
the
compatible.
The victory of the small. I mean, it's very Catholic in a way. It's like,
yeah. I think that the language doesn't sound very Tolkien-y to mm-hmm. me, but the idea behind it is thoroughly Tolkien and very similar to the kinds of comments that Gandalf and Elrond make at the Council of Elrond. Where,
yes. Yeah.
You know, Elrond says something. I'm paraphrasing. You know, something in the ballpark of, you know, "Oft is the way of the world. The small must do. You know, the great deeds are done by the hands of the small because they must, while the eyes of the great are elsewhere." You know, basically
right.
that frequently throughout Tolkien, what we see is that the big name hero type people, the Avengers type guys, are fighting this battle or that battle, but ultimately the decisive blow is struck by some small unknown person who you know, it just finds himself in a position to have to act and does so and succeed. So, yeah, I think I like it. I love it. I think it's great that they're that's part of the way they're incorporating this. The story of the Hobbit into the larger framework of Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings. You know, this is something that Tolkien himself was kind of doing when you look at the quest for Erebor and some of the stuff in the Unfinished Tales, where he starts having he does these scenes that involve Gandalf sitting around and gone in Minas Tirith with Frodo and Sam, and Frodo asking, like, you know, why the heck did you send Bilbo on that adventure mm-hmm. anyway? Because when you read The Hobbit, you get the sense that this is all just kind of a happenstance, kind of just sort of a random thing. And what you get from Gandalf in The Quest for Erebor when he's explaining this to Frodo is mm-hmm. is kind of a bigger picture sort of, you know, like, well, I had this wasn't just random to send him on a journey, but I actually was trying to solve a real problem, Smaug, and to help the dwarves. And as far as Bilbo goes, you know, there's some eminently practical reasons to send him, that they need somebody whose scent Smaug won't recognize, and Smaug knows dwarves, knows elves, and knows men, but he won't know hobbits. But also just that Gandalf is an agent of providence, you could say.
Yes.
And that you know, he just feels moved to send this hobbit. He just knows if this thing's going to work out, Bilbo has to go. And he never really explains why. He doesn't give a line of reasoning that leads to that, but rather, you know, it's like a revelation, essentially. Like, I just know, and he says this to Thorin. Thorin's like, I don't want to take this hobbit with me. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. And Gandalf says, you know, flat out, look, I'm telling you right now, if you don't take him, you won't succeed. And furthermore, mm-hmm. I'm not going to bother trying to help you because I just know you won't succeed. And Thorin takes this seriously. Thorin knows when Gandalf makes a pronouncement like that, like, you know, I'm telling you right now, I just, you know, feel it deep down that you cannot succeed if you don't take him. Thorin knows to listen to that and take that seriously, because Gandalf is tapped into something greater. So
I like that idea of almost providence, that even perhaps Gandalf is it's escaping him. He just feels that this needs to happen. And mm-hmm. and little did he know that this would go way beyond Smaug. And that might explain his reaction to, you know, Bilbo's phrase that he found something in the cave and, you know, my courage. And then he starts to probably already kind of feel that something bigger is going to happen and doesn't really know exactly what. But it's cool. It's kind of all these kind of precursory moments that lead up to, you know, the bigger picture and the bigger destiny of not just Bilbo, but of Frodo and the entire world.
Yep. So the panel, which happened right after the footage, was interesting. There were some more controversial moments. For example, when Peter Jackson introduces Philippa Boyens as possibly a more avid Tolkien geek than any of you.
Oh, dangerous thing to say at Comic-Con.
Yep. Yeah.
But she is extremely very knowledgeable. I listened to her in the director's commentaries on the Blu-rays, and my goodness, these people together, they know so much about Tolkien. But mm-hmm. anyway, there's always someone who knows more.
That's right. Philippa expressed her admiration for the female characters in Tolkien, and also sort of explained why, you know, what they were trying to do with Tauriel, and that basically they just, you know, they wanted her to be an authentic Tolkien-esque character, even mm-hmm. though she's not actually in the books, and to sit in the world and fit much like, you know, other female, powerful female characters do, you know, like Galadriel is, mm-hmm. is sort of the example that they probably really think of. And I imagine I would not be surprised if they channel Luthien from the Silmarillion as well. She's also sort of the quintessential Tolkien female character. But there's also a lot of female characters, Morwen, the wife of Húrin, and people like that. So it'll be interesting to see. She claims that she says Tauriel's not a ploy. And she says she thinks we're going to fall in love with her. We'll see. I'm skeptical, but I'm willing to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. She makes some illustrative comments about the Battle of Dol Guldur. She says she had her geek out moment when Kate Blanchett stepped up to Ed, start working on the scene, the Battle of Dol Guldur. She says it's extraordinary. And that Galadriel immediately brings a very powerful feminine energy into the film. So that's
this is big. Exciting. But it, the Battle of Dol Guldur.
Yes.
And it involves an elf. We've talked about this and kind of tried to guess what it could be. Would it be like a stealth operation? Would it be small? Would it be? This seems to imply that this is going to be a big deal.
Well, when you put these kinds of comments together with the fact that they're doing three films now, I personally agree. I mean, my sort of thing all along has been with the two films. I don't know where this battle will belong, and I don't know how they're going to have time for it. Like, that's always been my worry.
Yeah.
now that they're expanding to three films, if we sort of go off the idea that largely what they're doing is taking things that were going to be cut and adding them back in, I bet that means a whole lot more Battle of Dol Guldur. I have this feeling.
It does also imply, though, that they're going to make up a lot of stuff.
Yes.
None of that is described. So that is scary for the purists.
It means
whole canvas that is empty and that Peter Jackson is going to paint upon.
Paint away.
are we going to like that? But it might work. It might balance the whole thing. But that's pretty cool that we have confirmation on the Battle of Dol Guldur being a big thing.
Yep. So there's actually a lot of stuff here that's really interesting. Peter Jackson made some extended comments about extended cuts of the films. People were asking, how do you decide what goes in the theatrical release? What goes in the extended cut? And mm-hmm. he sort of talks about how they don't film extra stuff that they don't intend to go in the movie. They don't just sort of gratuitously film stuff that they're like, well, this will be for the extended cut. Like, they film the script the way they write it.
Okay.
And then they have to go back and cut later. And that, you know, reinterpreting these comments in light of the decision to expand to three films is very interesting because when I first heard about the three films, I kind of was wondering if they were going to film new material. But I'm increasingly convinced that what they're doing actually is just that basically a whole bunch of stuff was getting cut.
Yes.
And they were like, man, this is a waste. So.
Absolutely. I think so, too. I think that the price that they would have to pay had they kept it to two movies would have been too big. And it seems like, and this always happens when you're undertaking such a gargantuan project, it always becomes much bigger than you think. The whole tricky part is it enough for a third movie or should we be just strict and cut? Because if we turn it into a third movie, we might dilute the whole thing, but the more I think about it, the less I'm worried about that. I think actually, these three movies, there is a lot to say for that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get into that after our Comic-Con wrap up, which we should kind of try to wrap it up. Were there any more things?
Well, I think one thing that's interesting, just briefly to note, that's not a Hobbit thing is. Nearly every time fans have a chance to ask questions of Peter Jackson, somebody asked, when are you going to make a movie about the Silmarillion?
Yeah. I heard your reply yesterday when you were recording Reels in the Dark with Corey Olson, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
But tell me again.
And it's really funny, too. You see this, it's fairly widely known that the Tolkien estate owns these rights and is holding on to them with a death-like grip.
And they don't like Peter Jackson's interpretation of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And he says this. He says, Silmarillion is totally owned by the Tolkien estate. I don't think the estate likes these movies at all, so I wouldn't imagine the Silmarillion's going to go anywhere for quite a long time. But Christopher Tolkien, of course, confirmed this in the Le Monde interview that he did a few weeks back,
right,
where he basically said he hates the films and everything that's been done with his father's story.
Really?
But who else is
going to turn this into a movie? I mean, what are they thinking?
It's hilarious, though, because, if you go over to, for example, the OneRing.net's Facebook page or places like that, you just see, there's apparently lots of people that don't understand this or refuse to recognize it or believe it, because you just see these comments like, I hope he makes a Silmarillion next. It's like, come on, people.
It's not going to happen.
He doesn't own the rights. You know this. But people want it. They demand it. So, there's some interesting pre-panel interviews that people should go watch. You can find them on YouTube. Actually, mm-hmm. they might be down now. I'm not sure if they're still up. Ian McKellen says Gandalf does some unexpected things and then says something about being in a relationship. And so that's what people have – that's another one thing that people are flipping out about. They think that's the Galadriel scene.
Mm.
I think they're probably just – Ian McKellen's just sort of he's just playing fast and loose. It's not an actual romance.
No.
Richard Armitage, there's an interview with him, and he talks a little bit about Thorin and makes some comments that might be relevant to the Battle of Azanulbazar. Like he might actually say that he thinks Thorin killed Azog. So that's interesting. Andy Serkis interviews, and Elijah Wood acknowledged that his role is as a bookend. So that seems to confirm that we will see Frodo at the beginning and at the
end. So not in the second movie, probably. Cool.
So it's worth also pointing out that there is a – if you go over to EW.com, there is a there's a pre-Comic-Con released 10-scene Hobbit scrolling image that's kind of interesting. It's not photos. It's artist renditions. There were some lenticular posters, so like 3D posters of key characters that were up around.
Saw that in the production video,
It's pretty neat. And last but not least, at the time of Comic-Con, the rumor mill was spinning wildly about a third film. Yes. And of course, at this point, we know that is going to be the case.
That's where they kind of prepared the audience. I finished writing an article about the communication strategy when it comes to these three movies. Posted over at my own blog, FatherRoderick.com.
Ooh, I'll have to read that because I'm very interested. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. My impression is that they were determined to do this.
Of course, of course. Let's not be naive. This was not a spur of the moment thing. We'll talk about that after our break. I just want to give a little preview of the stuff that we already uncovered in our frame by frame analysis of the production video 8, which was given kind of like a consolation for the people that couldn't make it to Comic-Con, where Peter Jackson says, "Hey, we're going to show you a little bit of what we also showed the people there." But it was actually they showed a lot more different stuff from what they showed at Comic-Con. There are great, great little details, things that you can deduce from the scenes that they show, sometimes just a few frames, and it shows a lot of stuff from the second and the third movie. So, for instance, what I thought was great was the little glimpse of the stone giants in the Misty Mountains. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Never thought that they would show these stone giants. They're in the Lotro game, but they're just like tiny little giants compared to what we see here in this glimpse. We see, of course, the trolls and Bilbo running in front of a cooking cauldron. So that's cool. This is potentially from the third movie. We see a battle of armies, a battle of dwarves. An army of dwarves going to battle. This is definitely the dwarves going to war. We see hammers, swords, and then later on, I think we get a glimpse of Dain Ironfoot, and he's sitting on a throne. We don't see his face. There's a counselor next to him. We see very heavily armored soldiers behind him, exactly like the description of when Dain is joining the battle and sends 500 dwarves to the Battle of Five Armies. I'm convinced that is at this is all at 2:28 and 2:29, 2:29. Take a look at that. I'm convinced that this is for the third movie. It looks great. Then there is a mysterious kind of dwarvish tomb at one point with candles. Not sure what that could be. We'll think about that a little bit more, do some more research. There's lots of Mirkwood stuff. And then there is another glimpse at 2:37. We see Gandalf, and behind him are tents. And I'm pretty sure that these are tents that are used during the Battle of Five Armies. It's like the stuff that they built for commanders, during the battle. Looks similar to stuff that we've also seen in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. We also see part of the set that I think is Dol Guldur, because it has a bit of snow. It's certainly not Mirkwood. Then we see, of course, get pretty extensive photos of the set of Dale, which looks very Italian, very lovely. But then Peter Jackson confirms, we won't show you anything from the second and the third movie. Ergo, this must be in the first movie. And it makes sense, because what we know about Dale is mostly it's the Dale that is destroyed. And so in order to prepare for that shocker and to make it have a real impact, they are going to show us Dale in the first movie. They're going to show us how lovely it is, how great. I don't know, they might even kind of spin a story around it so that we get an emotional attachment to the pre-destruction Dale so that its destruction by Smaug will have so much more impact. I love that they do this, and I never thought that they would. Of course, we see Beorn's house. We see the wine cellar in Mirkwood. Let's see. There was some more stuff. Great stuff about from Rivendell. And I think that they're, at one point the dwarves are eating there. I think that's in Elrond's library. Because it's a circular room. It has a staircase. There are books in the background. Now, we know that elves normally don't write books, so there's only one place in the Last Homely House that has books, and it's Elrond's library. So I was amazed to see that they would be eating in Elrond's library. I hope it's Elrond's library, because I'd love to see that location. There's so much more. You know, that's why I want to do a special episode about just this trailer, about this production video and everything that it reveals. I think it's chock full of stuff, and I was amazed to see that no one did a frame-by-frame analysis yet in English. There's a German site that does this. For our German listeners, it is herrderringefilm.de. Anyway, it's a German site. It's one of the major sites about The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. They did a very good analysis. We're trying to do something similar, but perhaps even more with more speculation. Let's take a break here.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
Just a short break to let you know about our sponsors. We've got Bluehost, which I love as a hosting company. It's one of the best deals around for a very reliable service. They're one of the biggest in the world and one of the best rated ones. And for a fixed price, you get unlimited bandwidth and very easy installation of a blog. So if you want to get ready for these three movies and create your own Hobbit blog, Bluehost is the way to go, I think. And if you go to one of our websites, you know, thehobbit.sqpn.com or just go to sqpn.com/Bluehost and click on the link there. It'll set you up with the Bluehost in no time. And our second sponsor is the Amazon store. If you buy any, you know, Lord of the Rings or Hobbit-related goodies or one of the new, you know, Lord of the Rings Lego games stuff, do us a favor and click on that Amazon link on our websites at sqpn.com or thehobbit.sqpn.com, and by that you won't pay a penny more, but it will support us because Amazon will share part of their profit with us, and so that helps us pay for the bandwidth and stuff. Because of course for the bandwidth we can't use Bluehost, we have to use another service, because would be a little bit tricky to with all the thousands of downloads that we get. So let's talk for, we've got about 10 minutes left to talk about the big announcement of the three movies. We've already talked about it in our discussion about Comic-Con. Of course, Comic-Con was kind of, there are three phases when you want to announce change. And if you want to read my theory about how they organize this, read my blog post over at fatherroderick.com. There are three phases. One is you have to unfreeze the current situation, the expectations that are in place. Only then you can move, you can change something, and then you have to consolidate that change. And they follow that to the letter, which makes me believe that this was pre-planned for a long time. This was not something that they made up while watching the first rough cut, and then look, oh, I think we can make three movies. Nah. This was very well planned. Even the way in which they, you know, phrased everything at Comic-Con, it was all kind of very carefully planned to make sure that they would not upset the fans too much. And now, including a very common thing that they do when there is the risk of negative backlash, you do the magic trick. You do, look here, something new. And that's, I think, where these two titles come in. That they leaked that, I think, to the OneRing.net in order to get the discussion of the fans back to the content and off this whole, you know, potentially dangerous discussion of was, you know, what is Peter Jackson thinking? This is never going to work, you know? It's like, guys, talk about these two titles. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to follow their lead and talk about the two titles and the three movies and you know, what we can expect. Now, the two titles, the new titles that were apparently, this has not been confirmed yet, but have been registered by New Line, is the Desolation of Smaug and the Battle of Five Armies. Both titles seem to imply that the existing second title is going to be ditched, which was There and Back Again, which I loved because it's very, I mean, that's totally Bilbo writing in his big red book, you know. And instead, these two new titles, very descriptive, The Desolation of Smaug and The Battle of Five Armies, seem to cover exactly what we're going to see in movie 2 and movie 3. Now, I heard your discussion with the Tolkien professor, Dave, the other day, and both of your reactions to The Desolation of Smaug was like, what kind of title is that?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that title.
It is Tolkien, though, The Desolation of Smaug. It's the name of that area that was destroyed by Smaug, you know.
Totally is a Tolkien. our objection to it is not that it's not rooted in the Tolkien, but it's more that it's just kind of like, it's just kind of a boring title. It's just basically, you know, it's just like The Hobbit and a location. Corey has a broader thing that, like, I guess in his book, his forthcoming Hobbit book, he talks about how, you know, there is this location that people refer to as the Desolation of Smaug, but in his opinion, the real desolation of Smaug is what comes. Is all of the events that transpire in the book, essentially. That, you know, the effects of the dragon sickness that end up with the men and the elves almost battling the dwarves, and then the goblin army showing up, and there being this huge battle, and all these people die, and war, and all that kind of stuff. That is the real sort of desolation of Smaug.
I think it could definitely cover more than just, you know, this attack on Dale. And
I liked There and Back Again as the
me
third.
Too.
I think they're just registering these things and maybe kind of vetting them, kind of seeing similar to the way in U.S. presidential elections, the challenger will leak names like, oh, you know, we heard Romney's going to pick Condoleezza Rice as his vice president, and they'll do that, and there'll be this media buzz, and then a week later, everyone's forgotten about it. It's all just an attempt to see how people react.
Could be.
I don't think they're going to change it. I think the third film's still going to be called There and Back Again.
They don't have to, though, because we know that the first movie is set in stone. They can't change that anymore. There's way too much publicity about that, and all the merchandise is ready, and the t-shirts have been printed. The second movie, I think they can change it if they want to, and you know,
I think they could.
The middle title is going to be difficult. Anyway, if they use these two for movies 2 and 3, I think The Desolation of Smaug has to be the second movie, and then The Battle of Five Armies would be the third movie.
Oh, yeah, presumably that would happen.
I was thinking, you know, what is the difference between the book titles for the Lord of the Rings trilogy? I mean, the Two Towers. That is boring. The Return of the King. Sounds like something George Lucas could have made up, you know?
Well, Corey's sort of thing was, if they were doing sort of the similar thing, like if they were to name the third Lord of the Rings book and film at the same way that, you know, you might be using Desolation of Smaug or Battle of Five Armies, like the third one would be called, wouldn't be called Return of the King. It'd be called like the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. Or it'd be called the Slopes of Mount Doom or In the Shadow of Mordor or something like that.
The problem that I have with the title the Battle of Five Armies is that most people are not aware of that battle. And it doesn't sound like something that involves Bilbo or the Hobbit.
Right.
So it feels like something that is a bit more, you know what I thought would be a great title for the second movie? a storm is coming or a storm is gathering or something. There's one of the chapters of the Hobbit book that is about the storm.
Yes.
And that would be so much more kind of evocative, kind of more mysterious, more broader, much more in line with, I'm going to Google that, chapter titles.
I think it's, yeah, The Gathering Storm. The Gathering of Storm Gathers.
Yeah. And I don't know, it feels more.
That's not a bad, especially because my theory is that the second film is going to be largely focused on the White Council storyline and the Battle of Dol Guldur. So,
and that kind of makes sense to have to talk about Storm, because it's all about the rise of, you know, of the Necromancer and stuff. So it's a bigger storm than what Tolkien implied when he was using that title. Hey, very briefly, so here's my current theory about what these three movies is going to be about. If people want to hear more of this discussion, of course I invite them to go listen to Riddles in the Dark. That is an awesome like 2-hour discussion that you recorded with.
I think we're going to have to revisit this topic next week.
Absolutely, but very briefly, I think first movie set in stone is not going to change. I think it will be the final shot will be the barrels. That's where the story is going to end. Mm-hmm. I even think that they might show, still might show the Lonely Mountain, even though Corey yesterday in Riddles said, well, we might see something else. But I do think that the second movie is going to be about Smaug. I think Smaug is going to be the main villain in that second mm-hmm. movie. So the high point, I think, in the first movie is going to be, so it's an establishing movie. We will see Dale, we potentially will also see already a bit of Lake Town, and then but the big thing is going to be the confrontation with the elves, and then Bilbo finding a solution, setting up the Toriel story. Possibly we might get a glimpse of the Necromancer, although I think they will keep that for the second movie, setting up the dark backstory. And also, we'll have to show kind of the resolution of the whole burglar mission. It will basically have two storylines, similar to Empire Strikes Back in Star Wars. So it will have mm-hmm. the White Council, their necromancer confrontation. It will have the Battle of Dol Guldur. And then the second storyline is all going to be about Bilbo and the dragon. So it will still be very much Hobbit-focused. I do think that the necromancer might be played up as a second villain. And then the third movie is, I think, going to be the killing of the dragon. So mm-hmm. the highlight of the second movie is going to be the stealing of the cup, and then, you know, the apparent success of that, so triumph. And then, but wait a minute, storm is coming, you know, there's more to this, and the dragon is actually still alive. The third movie is going to be killing of the dragon, showing the bigger battle that is going on. The Battle of Five Armies, that's definitely going to be the highlight of that. Plus the return home and the whole, you know, kind of like how it changed Bilbo. So that too, by ending with the return to the Shire, will also make it still be about Bilbo and about the Hobbit. But you're right, we should talk about this a little bit more next time on our show, because I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
That's a very interesting notion. I like it.
But I think that if they do this two storylines in the second movie, it's going to stand on itself. I think it will be a great middle movie. If they do the Empire Strikes thing, it might actually be the best of the three.
Do you think maybe they might do the finish with the Battle of Dol Guldur, so defeat the Necromancer before the end of the second film?
Could be. We'll talk about that. We'll have to wrap this thing up. We'll talk about it next week. Thanks for listening. See you later. And we will be back soon.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.